Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Writers and Authors Show. We air this show every second Wednesday with our friends over at Books Forward. I encourage you to go to booksforward.com. And today we're excited to welcome Drs. Marissa and Simon Cleveland. No, we're not getting a checkup, but they're smart people, let me tell you. Very excited because they've got a new book out. And in fact, it's out a day now, for a day, a full day. It is called There Is No Box, A Practical Guide for the Relatable Leader. That's something really important, I think, in these times, whether we're thinking politically or in a business atmosphere, even in the education atmosphere, we got to think about our leaders. And if you're a leader, are you relatable to your team? So it is out now through Ben Bala Books. And we've got to say that Marissa, now she is a literary agent, and she's a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author. And her husband, Simon, lectures at Johns Hopkins University and Georgetown University. So they've already way outsmarted us. So welcome to the show, Marissa. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it. I am doing well today.
Great. Good to have you. Welcome, Simon. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Nancy. I'm doing great. Wonderful introduction. Thank you, Lisa, as well.
Thank you. No, we're excited about this. I think, you know, we've been talking about leadership on our shows for so many years. And I think what's so good about this book is you talk about being outside of the box. And the first thing that as I started reading it, it just reminded me, and I know that you lecture, Simon, so you may understand what I mean about this, but when you're in school, you have the typical humdrum teacher, right? And I'm not knocking teachers, everyone. No, I'm not. There's a teacher where you kind of fall asleep, and it used to happen mostly in history because it's always learn this date and blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then you'll have a teacher that makes you think and gets you excited. Maybe you're going to learn by staging a play together, or really challenges you, yet is on your side, so you're allowed to fall down and, you know, and then get back up, but really motivates you to move forward. So Simon, I'm going to go to you with this since you lecture. I feel like that's kind of, you want those leaders today, is that we can go into uncharted territory together. We're going to be able to think outside the box and kind of be safe to do it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing is a teacher, as you mentioned, is that we need to be able to connect with our students, and we need to be able to address variety of learning styles. And students are different. They come from different backgrounds. And so we as an instructors, we need to understand their starting lines. And if we do, then we become more relatable. And by becoming more relatable, we can communicate with them and connect with them to a degree where we'll become memorable with our examples and our lessons. Just like you mentioned, there's this one teacher that you would remember throughout your life. And it's only that person who was able to connect and understand where you started and where you're trying to go, and to help you along the way. So I think that's the important part. The same thing with leaders is what we are talking about in the book, is that we need to understand the starting lines of the people we are interacting with. And only by doing that can we begin to establish a rapport with them and to communicate with them compassionately, so that we can obviously touch their lives and you know, eradicate bad leaders. I think that's what one goal that we have with Marissa. So
isn't it the same, you know, in the classroom? To me is in a way the same as a workplace, as far as you have a whole lot of different people. You have different sexes, you have different races, you have different beliefs, you have different economic backgrounds. So when you're going to lead, you have to know all of those people in some way. You can't just put them all together and treat everybody the same. I don't think that works anymore.
Yeah, I think Marissa's got some really good points about being culturally agile. And I think she could talk about that specifically. What does this really mean to us?
Yeah, but Nancy, you bring up some really great points about being in the classroom. I was a high school teacher for a number of years. And in fact, one thing that I do mention in the book, not to, you know, give too much away about the book, but was when I was in high school, I started up in Northern Virginia in the classroom, and then I moved to Florida, and it was a complete cultural shock to me. And one thing about, you know, when Simon and I are doing like our research, because we've been researching leaders for a long time, and we basically are like the curators, we curate all of the theories and articles that are read, and we study other leaders, and we look, and somebody was like, well, you are the leader, you're the teacher in the classroom, like you close the door, it's just you and those children. And that's exactly what relatable leadership is about. It's about knowing how to reach, you know, 10 different leaders in 10 different ways. Like you have to be able to teach a concept to 30 different students in 30 different ways, because they're not all going to understand the way you teach naturally, and they're not all going to learn the same way that you learned. So that's a core concept in our book, is exactly hitting on that teacher-student relationship.
And what led you both to write this and then write it together? I know, Marissa, you've written before, obviously, you know, bestseller, and she's a literary agent, that does not hurt. And both of you with your teaching backgrounds, you know, that it doesn't hurt either. And it's very easy. I just want to tell people, this is a very easy, accessible book to read, no matter where you are, what stage in leadership or career. I mean, the sooner you read it, the better. Like, you know, really, because it's very, it's just easy to read. And I feel like it's one of those books that I'll go back to like a lot, you know, and go, oh, you know what, they were talking about this, let me reflect on this a little bit more. Because one thing you talk about so much is you can't be a CEO unless you're a CEO of yourself. And so there is this accountability that you bring to, you just don't get a job, have a title, and then here you are, you're the leader, everybody, this is how it goes. It's about, you have to be the leader of yourself first. So that's what I wanted to ask you about, like, what led you to write this book and then realize, like, put those two things together, self and then, you know, being the leader of a team, but also a leader of self.
Well, I will jump in with the why we decided to write this book, and Simon is more than welcome to disagree with me, but I've always wanted to write a book with him. And the interesting thing is, like, way back when he was recruited for Accenture out of graduate school, he had the opportunity to go speak at the University of Maryland, and I was in the back of the room, and it was for like some business club, and I watched every single, I mean, I'm going to say I watched every single student in that room just eat up everything he said. He's like, oh, they're like, how did he know? That pinpoints exactly what I wanted to hear. And they all rushed to the front of the room after to speak with him. And then as the years went on and we did our careers and, you know, we're separated, we see, not us separated, but we're separated in our career lives. And then we get together in COVID in 2020, where we're working together in the same house. And I listened to him record a lecture. And then I listened to him record another one. And then I listened to him record another one. And I was like, this needs to be a book. This, everything that he's teaching these graduate students and their adult learners, he's talking about experiences, broadening their range of influence. I'm like, we need to make this a book. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to take your lectures. I'm going to take some of my personal experience that I'm learning, because I was doing my doctorate at the time. And I'm like, I really think we need to make this a book. And so that's my answer. I'm sticking to it.
Cool.
And Simon, how was that for you? Like, suddenly you're going from lecturing to now we have to put pen and paper or like computer keys. Like, what was that process like?
I mean, I really enjoyed working on this book with Marissa. And, you know, as I was going through this experience and we were formalizing our framework and we were talking about what are the really the five key principles, we were thinking more about the fact that leadership needs to be an authentic type of experience. And we have both worked in both in government and in education and private sector. And we have been exposed to bad leaders for many years and have found out that, you know, when you socialize with these individuals outside of work, they turn into completely different people, and you could definitely connect with some of them. So at the center, at the core of it all, and what we'll find out in the book is that we are talking about a behavioral change. leaders need to be who and authentic to themselves. And it starts, like you mentioned, with being the CEO of your own life. But you do not become a duplicitous personality and change completely in front of your followers or your employees when you're at work. And then when you go home, you become somebody else. Mm-hmm. Instead, you embody and you become who you are everywhere you go. And you change your nature and your personality to be that leader everywhere. And then you don't have to pretend to act differently with your employees or the people who follow you, because that takes so much more energy and it's so much more not authentic. People are not stupid. They can zero in and mm-hmm. find out when you're not being true to yourself. But if you are following these five principles and if you are growing into that, becoming that leader, then you would be authentic. People will resonate, will come to you, and they'll follow you wholeheartedly. And then you'll be able to really kind of lead them on the path and accomplish the objectives of whatever you set your mind to in your organization, in your community, and your family. But it does happen at that behavioral change, realizing that that's not a kind of a tool set that you reach into and take out for specific leadership skills, but you become that authentic leader everywhere you are. And you become that mentor constantly.
Well, you know, I have to go back to one of my first jobs, and a manager that I just used to study him because I thought it was so weird. I was just a kid out of high school, and I went and worked for this firm, and I worked my way up from file clerk to being a bodily injury insurance adjuster for this insurance company in this one office. And I noticed something about him, about how the office was divided. All the salesmen were men, and they were all in a room where you could see them because there's glass cubicles and stuff, and you could see them all. But there was a whole bunch of men in that room. All the file clerks were women, and all the secretaries were women. And then the adjusters had like this row of little offices that you could see, and the adjusters, I was the only woman, everybody else was male. And when he talked, when the manager talked, every morning we'd have to have the little meeting thing. When he talked to the men, the door was closed and he yelled and there were swear words. When he talked to the group, including women, it's a whole different style. It used to make me laugh because I thought it was really funny that for some reason he thought it was okay to swear and yell at the men, but obviously you can't do that with women, or women are too weak to take that kind of treatment, or he thought it was polite the way he was doing it, pick any answer. But it stuck in my mind as, okay, so you're a leader over here for this in this manner, and then you're a leader over here in this manner, and now I don't trust you at all. That's where my mind went.
It's a really interesting observation.
Well, this is weird.
Well, but doesn't that go with what you say in your book about you know, what you do? It should flow throughout your personal, professional exactly. life should be kind of connected, right? So it's about being an authentic you.
Yeah, so 100% that you basically just summed up the reason why we have that chapter on embracing the leadership lifestyle, that it's not mm-hmm. a trait, it's an actual lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that. And then also what she was saying, it's like, okay, so we're going to do this to men, but not women. So
yeah.
That to me gets into the cultural side, being culturally connected. And I know there's culturally appropriate, but then let's look at actually connected, you know. I think that's something that we need to look at. I mean, and what I like, I think that we should send this to politicians. I know you work in government, but my first thing was when I saw your book, the media, and I know we've had it for, I think about a month or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to send this to a lot of politicians, because the leadership, I think when we talk about leadership and you mentioned bad leaders, I think all of us in our minds immediately jumped with a list and going, what, you know, what are you doing? You know, so would you say that this would be good for leaders in politics and government, not just CEOs of a company? I'm sorry, but I just want to go there because I'd like to send it to a lot of different people, because when you lead a community, I think that's really important. If you're supposed to listen, mm-hmm. and like you say, look at that lifestyle that you're leading so that it follows through. And I'm not attacking anybody. I'm just saying.
No, I do. I agree with you 100%. In fact, the other day, it's really exciting because Simon and I, the next piece of this that we're working on is creating a leadership development workshop for emerging leaders. But of the big pieces that I studied in my doctorate was non-hierarchical leadership. And that was through community leadership development. And quite honestly, it was from a politician who told me you would be great in this leadership development program. And so that was like my first, you know, foray into non-hierarchical. Because I'm like, oh, I don't have a title. I didn't have a title then. I wasn't a founder of any company then that was growing or anything. And like, oh no, it's just, it's traits and it's learning about the community. And, you know, you have your Girl Scout troop leader, who's one of my close friends, who has a, well, I consider like a normal day job with a normal title. She has a family, and yet she's leading these Girl Scouts, you know, through all these different activities and creating things. And it's that type of leadership of the non-hierarchical piece, but it's the community, it's the service to your community. And I, a politician actually was the first one of our commissioners who she showed me this. So I 100% agree that any politician should read this.
Right. Right. No, I think of all levels. And I mean, I think we're looking at so many changes in our country and around the world, because all these principles also need to connect with, I think your book should go, you know, to England too. And you know, all these different places.
Especially right now.
Yes. No, but because we are in a state of flux. And I think part of the problem is that we haven't abandoned old ways of leadership. And leadership used to be rule with an iron fist. And I think we're done with that. And I think the younger generation stepping into new companies, starting new companies, whatever career, right? Be it political or not, no matter opening a nonprofit, whatever you're doing, maybe just, you know, leading a team of volunteers for something, leading with an iron fist, I don't think that gets you very far. What would you say for that, Simon? I mean, that's why that's the beauty of your book to me, is that we're kind of getting rid of that old way.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, Lisa. And I'd like to go back to Nancy's example. And she had that observation of how that particular individual behaved with males in one way and with females in another, or with a group setting in a different way. And I am certain that even the males that were behind the closed door were probably wondering, what is the matter with that individual? And why does he behave like this? Because not every person in that room probably agreed with that lifestyle. They probably weren't being in that matter dealing with their own spouses at home. So I've had instances like this with managers, people who would swear quite a bit, or people who assume that just because we're males in a room, we kind of behave in a certain way towards each other, as you know, boys in a locker room, or you know, we have a certain president that did that kind of stuff, talking about things like this. And I do not think that that really is resonating with how leaders are supposed to be with the people that they work with. They should, in my mind, be cultivating that idea of a non-hierarchical kind of a leadership style. And that's what we touch in the book, is that if they do not come from a position of power, right? This is the old type of school where, you know, leadership theories of the 50s, where, you know, it's the leaders are born and, you know, they come up with that whole charisma and the power and the you know, that has been proven not to be the case. I mean, we've gone through evolution of these types of theories over the past 70 years, and we're finding out now that It's behavioral. It's if it resonates with the way you interact with individuals, if you're being authentic, if you're kind of being a servant, and that's this whole leadership, servant leadership style, where you cultivate and you support, you empower, and you are in the background. You are allowing your, it's an inverted pyramid. You are the leader at the bottom who is carrying the weight and supporting your followers and your employees, because they're the ones that are accomplishing the work. Mm-hmm. That's how leaders are, in our minds, supposed to approach that interaction with their employees, and anywhere in the community, in the family. They are coming up with that supporting, mentoring kind of a behavior in order to allow these individuals to develop or to expose their characteristics, because quite a bit of time that as Nancy mentioned, they come in with this arrogant attitude, thinking that they know what's best for everybody. I have found out when I have led teams that if I step back and I allow these individuals to explore and develop their skills and character, that they are actually solving the problems that are there, that I, as an individual, as a leader, I do not have to step in and try to solve a problem. They have the skills and the abilities and the know-how and the, we'll call them transaction memory systems. They have these experiences that they've dealt with these instances in the past. So they know how to solve this. They don't have to be quiet and watch me come up with a solution to a problem. I have to be quiet and allow them to speak and listen to them and cultivate that a situation where it allows them to actually share with us the way to solve a problem, to move forward.
That's true. I mean, because if you do the iron fist thing, then you kill creativity. And so your team is like, okay, we're just babies. We're going to do what we're told so we can get our paycheck and go home.
Yeah.
You're and not going to move forward or bring any new ideas because you're already scared to, because the road to being creative and thinking outside the box has now been cut off by someone who is the boss, manager,
with
whatever
the iron
you want
fist. To, yeah.
With the iron fist. And it's okay. So I made my children behave for the day. Now I'll go home, come back to work tomorrow. And children, please behave again the way I want you to. And I just want to add to this guy, because it still bugs me. When he used to smoke in the office, which I know.
This is way back.
This is way, okay, don't go way back. It's not 1800.
Partial back. It's a partial back.
But I mean, he used to smoke in the office. No one else was allowed to. But when he had a cigarette, this is so weird to me, and I'm still trying to figure it out. Maybe you guys can help me on this. When he was in front of women, he held a cigarette between two fingers, normally with a cigarette pointing out. When he smoked in front of the men, he curved the cigarette between his thumb and forefinger.
He wanted to be a cool dude.
In towards his palm. And I used to watch him do this and try to figure out, why does he do that?
Because he's trying to be a cool dude. And that's like, you know, James Dean kind of style. Like, I'm just going, now I'm going way back, right? So that's kind of like the cool, like rebel look. And that means he's insecure. But I want to go back to that about stopping the creativity when you think about leading, you know, outside of the box. You know, being out of the box is, you know, when you have a company and you want to hire people smarter than you, you know what I mean? Because you want those ideas, you want things to progress. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in a climate now where we've got AI, right? Which is, everyone's scared of AI, but it is really, you know, it's a very interesting time because it's pushing us to be even smarter, right? In a way. And I think that's a big fear factor is, oh my gosh, now we're changing. But then you see things like, we just did an interview about California laws of stopping this, the what's happening in warehouses where you have to reach this quota. Basically, you're being tracked on every little bit of your performance to a point of, you're not human now. So we're treating
the tracking device.
Yeah. I mean, if you go potty, mm-hmm. then they know, like, mm-hmm. you went potty too long. You know, so that is not leadership. I mean, talk about an iron fist. So it's a very interesting thing, because leading in a factory setting or a warehouse setting should be still leading and letting people solve problems and letting them have that pride. So wouldn't that, if we don't let people have that creative problem solving, we're diminishing them as human beings, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Using creativity.
So I definitely agree with you. We are, we studied the companies. I think you might be referring to maybe Amazon.
Yes.
They are known for having one of the largest turnover rates from any company. So they're constantly on the lookout for hiring new people, because who would want to stay in a job like that, unless you're really struggling. So, think about this though. I listen to a lot of leaders right now who talk about how technology has changed our lives, and us as consumers, we have gotten to a point where companies like Amazon or Google or Netflix deliver services to us almost instantaneously. They have spoiled us, right? If I want to order something and I can not wait for 3 days or to go to the store, well, Amazon will deliver it with a drone maybe, but I'll get it probably if I live in a city on the same day. Netflix will deliver with pizza. And so there's this whole new model emerging from the business that they are exceeding customers' expectations. They're not just meeting expectations, right? So, and that's why we flock to these companies. That's why we use their services. That's why their stock prices are going up. And that's what is allowing them to agree to treat these employees, because productivity in the company is an important factor for them to be able to squeeze as much as they can value out, because through these services that people are delivering or through the projects they're working in these organizations, they are delivering value to the company. And these investors, so the marketplace, is focusing on that value. And we're seeing what's going on with the stock market up and down right now. So, there is to a degree this whole idea that the consumer is driving these types of forces in the marketplace to create that whole imbalance between how leaders are leading these employees. But what we're saying is that we are proposing some different types of lessons and plans in our book to how you as a leader can create a vision and how you can still deliver value in your organization by becoming more culturally agile, compassionate communicator, and kind of leading through that non-hierarchical type of leadership style to be able to deliver value still to your organization and meet your objectives and the expectations for your consumers, your customers, but in a humane way, so that you don't lose your valuable employees and then you have to go through unionization and then you have to, end up in the courts and then, hopefully, end up in the newspapers and then Brian Loyalty will suffer.
it's a slippery slope. No, but I love what you're saying, because it's really true. I mean, having to keep getting, employee retention goes out the window, which we've seen after COVID, right? And this is a huge thing that not just our country is dealing with. It's like, how do we get our people back in? And if you look at the hospitality industry and the restaurant industry, they've had a really hard time.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. And so it's like, being a housekeeper is not easy. And we've done that as a challenge with a bed and breakfast. No, it's not, everybody. I'm just going to let you know it's not. And it's, you do have to have that, let people come to you and tell you what's right and what's wrong or what's going on. And I think what's really also good about your book is, and Marissa, I want to go to you with this. We have more women in leadership roles and more diversity now than we've had for a very long time, but we're still not where we should be. And we do have talent out there, and we still have to go through these steps and get people in places that they belong, But I want to go with that, because when you look at women, you just, you know, look at Sheryl Sandberg, and you know, look where she is, look at all these women out there, and they didn't, it's like, as women leaders, it's always, oh, you're going to be emotional, you're going to be this, and then men have, you think men aren't emotional if they're doing the iron fist at, you know, not saying everybody, all men are doing that, so don't get yell, don't, no one yell at me, but I'm just saying, there is this partial thing where we have to have compassion, and you can have strength, and I think your book lifts people up by giving them the tools to move forward, to understand how to balance things out. Wouldn't you say for women, this is empowering for women to become,
to make compassion a strength instead of a weakness.
Yeah.
Which is a big thing. Like, we know one woman that was running an establishment and she said to us one day, you can't work them like you used to. Which was totally
hotel staff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she's talking about her hotel staff, and it was a shock to us that, first of all, that she would speak that way, and because her staff really worked hard and long hours in not the best of conditions, and because she was a woman. You wouldn't expect it. I mean, she's
but she tried to emulate her husband who did the iron fist. And so we watched this technique and we thought, wow, you can be compassionate. You're allowed to be a woman in a leadership role and be compassionate and strong at the same time. It's like, we don't, just because I'm a woman, I don't have to wear a suit. You know, I can wear a dress, you know? So Marissa, going back to your book, out of the box, wouldn't you say that really helps us to get to that part of understanding that balance?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think one of the beautiful things that the parents of the workforce generation did was to raise these individuals, these young professionals now who want value in their lives. And like, I know we were joking about way back when with Nancy, but back in the 1800s when I was in the workforce, I have been quoting Patagonia forever about it's since their New York ad about, it's not the attainment of the summit, it's the style of the climb. And it's like, I'm all about, like, if you're going to get somewhere or do something amazing, I always tell Simon this, I'm like, if I'm going to go do something amazing, I want you there with me. I don't want to do it alone. And if something incredible is happening, it's, you know, bring other people around. Like, there's that old saying, we're the mosaic of all our experiences, and we're the average of the five people and their five people and their five people around us. And so I want to surround myself with relatable leaders. And that was also another
separation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another reason it's why it's like, if we can just make everybody understand that everyone has their own journey, you don't have to follow the same path, but you don't have to settle for the default. Like, just because they said it has to be this way, you don't have to do that. You can find your own path. And when you have other relatable leaders helping.
Print this out, everybody, get the book quick. Just because they said so. No, wait. I need to write that down. I need a bumper sticker.
I know. I love, that's why I love There Is No Box, because it kind of went back. Simon and I, we did a Matrix marathon. And I don't know if you know the part about the spoon, like where she's trying to bend the spoon and the guy's like, there is no spoon. And we were like watching it and stuff. And in our 20s, everyone's like telling us, you know, think outside the box. But if you don't know how to think outside the box because you don't have experiences, you can't bring your experiences to the table. People aren't, you know, willing to listen to anything that's not what they want to hear. And so it's like, there is no box. Like, we can go do whatever we want. If a 22-year-old kid can become a billionaire and run a company as a Harvard dropout, why not us? Yeah. Why can't we share what we're learning?
I want $1 billion. Bring it. Bring me the box with the billion dollars in it. It's going to be a really
big
box.
In the box.
And
it's not
Amazon
in the box.
Will deliver it with the pizza, but I want wine with mine. No, but it's really true, because, you know, it's like the same thing as youth education. Something we've learned through, you know, just all the interviews.
Gosh.
So like, we're in college full time. That's, you know, really what we do. And it's like, it is about, you could talk to yourself blind to a kid, if you're just going to keep talking, if they don't know how to study. We've forgotten how to teach kids how to study. Like, are they listening? Are they reading? You know, how are they? Are they more interactive? Everybody learns in a different way just from youth. Not everybody, here's your book, go get your assignment done, and that's that. It doesn't work that way. So we're going right back to, we've gone full cycle now. We're back to school exactly. Again, Simon.
I had the opportunity, and this is really odd because I have no qualifications for this. I was hired to teach third graders in a school in Nairobi in Kenya. I had no qualifications other than I was white and my job was to teach English to these students. And I'm like, and they knew I didn't have the qualifications. They didn't even care. They said, "Do you speak English?"
You cared.
Yeah. And so I'm like, well, let me go try and let's see. It was more fun. Those kids were so appreciative and they so made fun because I had an American accent, more American than I do now. And they thought that was hilarious. And I thought their accent was really funny. So that engages in how do you say the letter O? Is it oo? Is it aw? Is it oo? Yeah. And we centered on the word box because I don't know how we got up to the word box.
Yeah, it's all
said,
your fault. It's
you guys. I know, they said they were saying box. And I'm like, you mean box?
The British accent.
And they're like, yeah. No, it's box. And it just started from there. We came to laugh at how different we were. Mm-hmm. And I think
together.
I learned way more from them than what they learned from me, I'm pretty sure.
But that's the point. Isn't that the thing where for leaders can learn yes. from their team if they open their minds to it? And
right.
also, if it's something isn't resonating, it makes you, I mean, we think outside the box, you know?
Outside the box.
Yeah, it makes you think out, like, and stretch your own muscles to get to where you want to go. You know, and by the way, thanks for quoting Patagonia. I think they're one of the best companies we have on the planet, really. I really do. And they just, you know, they save so much land. And so I bow down to them for sure. But before we go, number one, congratulations. The book is out for a day, everybody. And of course, we're recording before the book is out, but congratulations. We're really excited with what you've written and put out into the world. But from each of you in closing, what is the one thing you want audience to get from the book? I know there's like, you know, multiple chapters, but
right.
one thing, let's start with you, Simon. What is one thing you want someone to get that maybe we haven't touched on today?
One message is awaken your inner leader. You are a leader inside. In your family, in your community, in the organization you work. Embrace that, recognize that. Empower yourself, give yourself permission to lead, and then, you know, pick up a model, a framework, you know, for example, the one that we've presented to how to make that a leader inside of you emerge. Follow these steps and, you know, be memorable, make a change in where you work and where you live.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Marissa, for you, what is one thing you want people to
do? I love Simon.
I know. I do too.
So for me, it's about being willing to have the conversation, to like critically think and share ideas, but mostly about gathering other people's ideas and analyzing like why they feel the way they feel, so you can better understand how to have effective conversations with them. Our book isn't like the end all be all. It's not the right answer. It's opening that conversation of how can I be a better leader for myself and for others.
I like this. And you're going to be doing more programs, and this is great. You know, it just going further, taking the book further, because the book is, it's like a working book, you know, it's something that you can keep using, and I see it growing, and I hope you do more, the two of you, because I think you're doing awesome stuff, and that's just my own personal opinion, and my opinion matters.
thank you.
But Marissa, your website, marissacleveland.com, is that the best website for everyone? I know you can get the book on Amazon, but you know, all those great online stores, and also go to your local bookshops and ask them to carry it. But you guys are all over Instagram. There is no box on Instagram. We like that too.
Yes.
Marissa's on TikTok, and you know, she is a gymnast, so she might show us how to do some flippity-dippity tricks. Yeah.
Nice.
And then also Twitter, Marissa Cleveland, and also go to Cleveland Simon on Twitter. But Marissa Cleveland, is that the right place?
Yes, that's a great place to go.
Okay. Okay, all over the place, and we'll make sure everybody gets that all connected. But thank you both for joining us, and have a wonderful journey with your book.
Yeah,
thank you, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hey, everybody. Also, keep up with booksforward.com. They're awesome. We love them. We've been working with them for over, I'd say about 20 years, something like that. They really represent the best authors, and you have two of them on the show today. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks all for joining us.